it's a big change for someone who was a working official in the doctrinal section and who comes back as prefect. I was unaware of all of the duties of the prefect and was happy to have someone else be prefect and take charge of the responsibilities for them. But to coming back as prefect, it certainly has helped me to have the knowledge as a, you might say, as an insider having worked here, have a feel for what the officials do, how they go about their tasks, how to include them in some of the results of what is the result of their tasks. All of that, of course, is a part of what the officials here in the congregation are doing their work for, that is to allow the congregation, that is the membership of the congregation, to make, to get a good grasp of what the issue before them is and to be able to discuss it intelligently, to arrive at a decision, and then to have the prefect take that decision to the Holy Father for his approval or his instruction to study it some more or whatever he might decide about it.
Now, we've already mentioned the fact that you did work here as a curial official, that you were the archbishop of a rather large archdiocese in California. You also were at one point the head of the California Catholic Conference, which often deals with the legislature and things like that within the state on political matters. These are three very different fields, three different aspects of work. How have these things helped you to prepare for this new position?
Well, I suppose if you're paying attention at all to what you're doing and you're engaged in it, which I think I could say I was, all of the different principal works that I have done as a priest over these past 43 years, working in a parish, teaching high school, 6 years teaching in the seminary was wonderful work, theological work. I did that just prior to my coming back here to serve as an official. As you mentioned, working in the California Catholic Conference, getting a feel for the work of a state government in all of the various questions and issues that intersect with the work of the church and with the teachings, especially the moral values of the church. Even my work as Archbishop of Portland, before I went to San Francisco for the past 10 years, I was Archbishop in the second oldest archdiocese in the United States, the Archbishop of Portland in Oregon. And although these are neighboring states, they are quite diverse in their culture. The Northwest typically has had a very independent-minded citizenry, has a low percentage of Catholics, in fact, a low percentage of people of any religious faith. Oregon is the most, it's called the most unchurched state in the United States, and that was a new experience for me, and I learned a lot from it. And so I think I can bring from all of these areas, and particularly from my last 10 years as Archbishop of a major metropolitan center of commerce and of media in the United States, as San Francisco is, a sense of the complex pastoral realities that a bishop faces.
You are the first American to head this office. Many people were surprised, actually, that an American was appointed as head of CDF. Do you think there's any significance to this?
My read on it is that the Pope wanted to get someone, after all, he was surprised, I suppose, by the fact that he was elected Pope. And I think he wanted, first of all, to get someone quickly into this office as his successor, because he knew that if this congregation were left headless, you could say, for a long period of time, the work would not effectively go forward because they would always be waiting for the appointment of their new prefect and so forth. So I think he wanted to find someone quickly. I think he found me because he had known me. I was a member of the congregation. I had worked here. I think that he felt experience at this point was something that counted a lot for him. And that's basically about what he told me when he told me that he was going to make me his successor, which I gasped and said, Holy Father, I'm not the person for that. He said, yes, you are, and he gave me his reasons. And I suppose also, in another way, the fact that the congregation now has responsibility for a new area of disciplinary matters that the motu proprio of Pope John Paul II, Sacramentorum Sanctitatis Tutela, has placed here in the congregation, that is the responsibility for dealing with issues of sexual abuse of minors by priests, by clergy, that given the experience of that, the explosion of that on the American scene over the past few years, my experience with that, both as a local bishop and as a member of the mixed commission that was sent over by our conference to iron out some differences in our approach here with the Vatican, those things, I think, probably also may have said to him, it wouldn't be bad to have someone also who has this experience. I think that's my read of it anyway.
The norms that were decided a couple of years ago in Dallas have been renewed. Is it working?
I would say very much so. It's a multi-pronged program in which one part is to deal with those priests who have been shown to be guilty of abusing minors, whether recently or even in the distant past. But the other issues about education of our communities, how to be sensitive to issues involving sexual abuse, how to know what they are, how to report them, to make priests sensitive to that and their obligations to report allegations to the authorities, both the civil and the church authorities, how the bishop then should comport himself in his outreach to the victim to be fair and make sure that they have been given a good hearing, to have a board that can assist him, a board of competent and expert people who bring various expertise to assist him in the discernment of the steps that should be taken and the validity of allegations and so forth, how to interact with the very difficult, litigious aspects, the legal community, the state laws differ very much from state to state in the United States, and there is no one-size-fits-all vade mecum that you can draft to say how you're going to respond to these allegations, and particularly to these court cases that are introduced. Currently, there is an apostolic visitation of the seminaries that is underway that was asked for by the bishops of the United States as an additional guarantee to people that we would have an objective point of reference to review the programs at the seminaries, admissions to seminaries. So I think I would say on the whole, the bishops did not hesitate, even many of us who were challenged by a huge outlay of financial expense to satisfy claims sometimes ordered by courts, decided by juries, to make sure that we put adequate resources into these programs, outreach to victim programs, support for legitimate claims that they may have for therapy and so forth. I would say that, to my knowledge, this program has been an extraordinarily successful response. And we even have a monitoring program that helps the bishops and the dioceses with an outside independent audit procedure to evaluate their programs, to see if there are any weak points, and then to make sure that they're corrected. So I really think that the program is just what needed to be done. I'm sorry with so many of my brother bishops that it had to be done under such duress at the explosion of news reports and so forth that we're not more on top of this for a longer period of time in the past. But I think it has been certainly a very effective program since it's been put into place.
We often hear, especially in the Western world, that people now say they're spiritual, they're not religious. They when the difference between the two is described, they often use the word doctrine, and that when they use the word, it's not a positive in a positive way. It carries negative connotations. Why is that?
Well, let me say in general, you raise the question as one that is a phenomenon that we look at, the idea of spiritual versus religious. Now, let's take cannibalism, for example. What is the spirituality of cannibalism? Now, I would say that eating is the doctrine, but is there really a spirituality of it? And is it a good one? In other words, is every spirituality a spirituality for good? You know, today is Halloween. There are people who embrace a spirituality whose doctrines are witchcraft. They want to get in touch with a spiritual side, but our tradition tells us that there are good spirits and evil spirits. There is good and bad in the spiritual realm as well as in the human corporeal realm. And so a spirituality without doctrine is an amorphous spirituality that can be anything I want to make it. People want to break out of what they consider to be constraints and limits of those religions, and so they say, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. But in effect, a real spirituality has to involve religion, because religion is about how you order your human life vis-a-vis God. That spirituality, there's a kind of popular sense in saying, oh, well, I'm still trying to find something that is helping me to be better. That's spirituality. But religion means that you are face to face with some options that you have to make about whether there is a God and what that God may be asking, or what kind of a relationship he wants to have with you, his creature. Well, I mean, there's a whole sense in which a modern man is saying, I don't want to be a creature. All I want to say is that religion is always going to involve something that involves a concrete challenge to us in terms of our relationship to God.
We just finished a general meeting of the Synod of Bishops. What were your impressions of the Synod?
It was a very rich experience, but it has its frustrating moments. The intervention of each bishop, now they call these bishops from all over the world, and they're usually well-spoken, thoughtful persons, who, when they arrive here, are told that they have to say what they want to say about this subject in 6 minutes. Now, that's a very big challenge, and especially for people who are used to talking perhaps more than we should as bishops. But it's a discipline that we all accept, and some accept it willingly and others don't prepare for it. But the microphone goes off at 6 minutes, and they're talking to the air, so the loudspeakers are no longer there. So it's a kind of an effective procedure from that point of view. The synod process, apart from all of these interventions, is directed towards two things: toward the message, which we saw a couple of times and were able to make some comments on, and the propositions, which we only saw in discrete language groups, and only at the end of the process did we see them, not have a chance to discuss them. I thought that the 50 propositions, some of them are quite good, and certainly they all represent some things that somebody has said, but I thought they didn't capture the very beautiful and inspiring interventions that many bishops gave from their experience around the world. Cardinal Topo, for example, one of the presidents of this synod from India, talked about the love for the Eucharist that the missionaries brought to his low caste tribe, and how the idea that Christ would come to abide with them, to be with them, to give himself to them, what that did for their sense of their own self-worth and for how it transformed their culture. And it was really a beautiful intervention. Well, there's nothing of that in the propositions, but put some of those beautiful interventions and things like that into the work product that goes into the apostolic exhortation that our Holy Father will be writing over the next year, and because they're truly inspiring, some very inspiring things that were said, and I was very delighted to be there, and hope that my little, you have to pick one little thing. I picked that little thing about having more doctrinal content in the homilies that are given so as to nourish our people and to offer that to priests. I think a lot of priests are looking for help, and you know, I think we can do better. It's going to take a lot of work, but I think we can help that situation. I'm hoping that we can, if the Holy Father agrees to it. I have a feeling he likes the idea.